And we're back. Greg? Hooray!
Are we?
We're back. We are back.
Welcome to the type1radio.com news bong. If you are hearing this first, go back and listen to hour one. Thank you.
And hopefully the people that were listening to hour one have retuned their sets.
Well, yeah, we're still here.
Yeah. sometimes they don't I keep telling people to just to refresh the prayer, but they never turn up again.
Wow. But they cannot, are the folks that get lost in a sleeping bag, aren't they?
But they, it can all be listened to just on the site. So,
you at your leisure.
At your leisure. I thought that was... better tune. Well, all of his tunes were great, but that one, it seemed to be, he is a sign of the time. Yeah, because he's following a celebrity death trend.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, Swami put a figure that he'd something like 800 million quid in the bank, or dollars rather. I mean, that's a lot of dosh, isn't it? That's more than anyone can possibly need in their life. But he did sort of, he did earn that amount of money because of his incredible genius and proficiency in churning out fucking... I mean, the whole of the 80s belonged to him, basically.
Yeah, and his, what was it, 1979, 1978, his first album?
Yeah. He told Morris Green, who died earlier this year, to fuck off. They wanted him to produce his first album. He said, no one's doing anything to my albums. I'm playing all the instruments and I'm doing everything. I'm producing it or I'm going somewhere else. And, you know, he stuck to his guns and, yeah, look, we... He actually got thrown off the Rolling Stones tour as well because he was getting bigger applauses than the Rolling Stones were getting,
right,
allegedly.
Right.
So, yeah. There's no denying the guy was good.
And also, somewhat of an outsider in the on the Hollywood scene, you know, on the sort of industry scene.
Definitely.
Yeah, total maverick. I was watching one of the concerts, and he was doing like a medley of different tunes, and him and his band very much reminded me of a continuation of George Clinton and like the funkadelic, like Parliament. Type of sound.
Sly Stone family.
Mm-hmm.
Funny you should say that. When I saw Prince in 88, George Clinton actually came and appeared. He just walked out and went, Prince, you little faggot. Shit, goddamn, get off your desk and jam. And he kept saying like all these profanities to Prince, and Prince just kept going, no. it was fucking fantastic. Yeah, that concert was amazing. He came on a car. Remember Alphabet Street?
Yeah.
Tune Alphabet Street. Yeah, that was out. That was the Love Sexy tour sort of thing. And he comes out in a Cadillac, you know, with Sheila E. and Cat, the dancer, on the top of this thing, and it was just fucking no support band, and it was 3.5 hours long.
And that's another amazing album as well, isn't it? Love Sexy.
Yeah, amazing. Well, that. The whole of the 80s, I mean, from when he started the New Power Generation, that was the kind of end of my... It's still a few... I mean, The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, no, that's a great song.
Yeah, Diamonds and Pearls, Cream.
Yeah, that was the kind of... Yeah, Cream and all that. That was the kind of end of the sort of my interest in him. But the whole 80s thing, Well, I was telling Dan last night, actually, that the first time I heard 1999 was in this place called the Queen Margaret Union in like Glasgow Uni's student union place. And I was just fucking off my tits on speed and booze, and just like, I was just watching this girl dance and this song came on and it was 1999. I was just like, wow. It was just so different from anything else, you know, from like Spandau Ballet and all the rest of it. So I just thought, that's amazing. Because I thought he was talking about Zeke when he goes party 200. Because we used to like smoke 00 Moroccan. is he singing about 00? But,
with his different sort of personas, you know, each album had a completely different vibe to it, didn't it, and look. And it is very reminiscent to sort of Bowie, isn't it?
Definitely.
With, you know, a complete genre in each section of his work, isn't it?
Well, there was all sorts, and there was Hendrix, wasn't there? And like I said, Sly and the Family Stone and Marvin Gaye, and like it was funny when we saw him, he did this sort of like smoochy section sort of thing. We did all these ballady bits and all that, and then the band came back on and he goes, I didn't write the song but I like it, and it was Just My Imagination by the, you know, the Temptations, and it was fucking brilliant, just amazing. Yeah, just
what so good. What sort of size venue was it? Was it quite small?
The Wembley Arena.
Oh,
Wembley,
right.
Arena.
So quite big.
It was in the round. It was a massive, yeah. It was at the round. It was the stage was in the middle. And when I went to buy the tickets, I went to Tower Records in Piccadilly, and I just walked in and walked straight to the box office, and I said, I can have 4 Prince tickets. And the woman sort of like gave me a bad look, and went, yeah, I suppose so. I was like, oh, fuck so. And what, I just looked behind me and I skipped the queue. I just walked straight to the front. And there was a big, massive light. And I was like, oh, sorry. But and then when we sat down at the concert, we were fucking 6 rows from the front.
Oh, wow.
And I just sort of I looked behind me and I went, sorry.
Well done, though. I mean, you know.
Yeah, oh, man, yeah. I mean, he was right there for most of the gig, right in front of us. It was fabulous. Great seats. Sadly, the guy who we went, because it was my friend, a really good friend of mine, came down from Glasgow with his girlfriend, and it was his girlfriend's 21st birthday, so it was a really magical night. But sadly, he died a couple of years ago, so that's him and Prince have gone. So yeah, a bit of a downer. But I spoke about the Bowie when Bowie died, about the Bowie, seeing Bowie, you know, because it was a similar sort of thing. I'd been listening to him for a bit. 6 or 7 years before I actually saw him, so I was familiar with everything, you know, Bowie and Prince sort of thing. So it was like, you know, there was a couple of things that I didn't know, because he played, remember the Black Album he wouldn't release?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah,
that was the sort of after Love Sexy and all that. Love Sexy was the light side and Black Album's the dark side. We've actually played 2 tracks off that, and that's when George Clinton came on one of those songs, and he played the sort of, you know, the sort of baddie bits in it. And they're the only 2 songs I've ever heard. You know, everything else he done was like, you know, from, you know, and like, was it you just saying, Nick, that he played a montage of all his tracks? He did that.
Yeah.
Quite often. So like 3 or 4 sections of where he just went through loads of songs and, you know, like a few bars of each sort of hit. So like, there's so many songs. I mean, how the fuck do you do it? But actually, I had tickets for the Sign of the Times tour, but it got cancelled because of the rain. Don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
It was like very weird. He had these neon signs and all that, and then in Holland, Amsterdam or something like that, apparently they blew up because of the rain and it was going to be too wet here, so he cancelled it. He was like, oh, for fuck's sake.
And then when he was doing his sort of cymbal slave bit, he was playing like really tiny venues, wasn't he? He was just playing, you know, sort of 100 capacity places.
Well, he would quite often turn up and do things. Well, didn't it? I think Swami was talking about him talking on TV about chemtrails and stuff like that. Yeah. He just finished doing, what was it, something like 90 nights at the O2?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? He'd done like fucking forever every night. And apparently he'd do that concert, no support band, 3 hours. He'd have a party every night afterwards and play again for another couple of hours.
Read this morning that last week he was in discussions with doing a couple of surprise kind of, you know, short notice pop-up shows at the Fox Theater in St. Louis. And the tickets were to go on sale on the 15th, but on the 14th, the promoter got the call from his people saying that they had to cancel due to illness. So,
And 57, that's no age at all, is it really?
I mean, we're only 5 years away from that, so.
No, yeah, no kidding. And he was in good shape.
Yeah, apart from
he was rich. He was fucking rich. He could have sorted
Despite being rich, he was still in good shape.
Yeah. Yeah, weird. So, tomorrow marks the London Marathon. And there's a couple of marathon-related sort of stories I heard this week. Apparently, like, two guys who lost their legs at the Boston Marathon completed this year's Boston Marathon and sat last Saturday or last Sunday or something like that. Did you hear that?
No.
Apparently, yeah, they'd lost limbs at
the Mason guy there again? That was at the Boston bombings and the Paris bombings and the Brussels bombings.
Might have donated some money for his new artificial limbs, though. But tomorrow, the London Marathon's going off in a good old friend, Tim Peake. Remember him?
Oh, the guy
he's
going to
run. Name sounds.
He's going to fucking run the marathon in space on a treadmill. My lad David Bohm from, from 2001. Mm.
Wow.
It's a bit odd, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'll take a fucking lot to do a marathon in space, though. You know, aren't his like feet strapped to the treadmill? Because it's running a marathon in zero gravity. That's some doing.
Yeah.
Hopefully there'll be a live stream of that. So he doesn't cheat. Yeah.
Stop for a burger. Yeah, it's quite funny because I've got the BBC News up here and it's got a.
Is that one of Heston Blumenthal's burgers that he sent him?
Possibly. Well, he's doing it for the Prince's Trust anyway, and it's funny because I've just got the BBC and it says UK astronaut Tim Peake is preparing to run the distance of a London marathon on the treadmill in the International Space Station, and in brackets, ISS. And at the bottom of the fucking thing, it says breaking news, ISS have just carried out a killing of a university professor in Bangladesh.
Yes.
Jihadist.
I think, is that the one guy that they hacked to death, apparently?
Yep.
Yeah, pretty grim.
From the back.
The ISS and the IS on the same news feed.
Oh, the ISIS and ISIS. Another story that caught my eye, three stories actually that are very related. Well, firstly, I think it must have been Tuesday, because I was at work. I went to get out my lunch. I went to the shop to get my lunch, and I saw the headline on a couple of the papers saying, talking about Madeleine McCann. The police. This was the headline. Police 6 months away from finding Maddie. Yeah. So then I looked at took an interest in who was writing that story. It was from the Mirror, a guy called Martin Fricker. Unfortunate last name there. I just like went onto their website, and on the same day, right, so this is the headline, McCann's, police say 6 months away from finding Maddie, in the paper, must have been, because this was another headline that, of the paper, of the same paper, was that the Portuguese police officer who'd the McCanns had sued over I don't know, defamation of character,
libel case.
Yeah, libel case. He'd won the appeal and had that revoked. So my mind was, oh right, well Bell's Pottinger must be up to their own tricks again, because. Looking at the online now, looking at the stories in chronological order, the police, the story of the police guy, came out. I think it was must have been about four. Must have been earlier that the day, and then the McCann story, which the, was run as the headline. Had come out later that day. So you know, it seems that the same paper is burying one story over another, and then because of this overturn of the libel case where this ex-police officer is now able to sell his book. The McCanns have threatened to take anybody to court, anybody in the UK to court, if they're found selling this guy's book. So
they're going to take Amazon to court.
So I went to. This guy's Twitter page, Twitter feed, and this Martin, the Martin Fricker, the Mirror, the Mirror supposed journalist. He doesn't seem to be doing much journalism, really. And I was really quite. I was empowered by the sense of the populace, because people weren't buying the story of the McCanns at all. No matter, it appears that no matter how hard that they try to push the McCann story. Now the tide is sort of turning quite a lot, in that people are really questioning what happened, or their motives. Saying that, there was another article by I think it might have been a like an ambassador or something, or a, like a. To some, maybe Kazakhstan or something. It was Craig Murray, and so he's got this blog, and he'd had this piece about the McCanns and this libel case being overturned, and and so it was. It wasn't absolving the McCanns. It was asking pertinent questions, but it wasn't asking enough pertinent questions. Reading the comments, excellently, as always, there's a brilliant brilliant comment there from Andrew Johnson, basically saying, is this another limited hangout? Because they don't seem to be tackling the elephant in the room, namely the 12-hour documentary done by Richard D. Hall. which, you know, if people and journalists are going to be tackling subjects such as this and are not aware of, in this case, Richard's 12-hour documentary, then they are not journalists, are they?
Yeah, they're not, well, they're not doing the jobs if they are.
Yeah.
The rock shy journalists are pretty pissed off. Yeah. Yeah, so I caught that thing that the Goncalo, is that his name? John Goncalo?
Juan.
Manuels.
Yeah.
Juan can't be right. Yeah, he's managed to get 568 grand out of them.
Yes.
Which is fucking good news.
And it was interesting how the story on the online section, the reading it, you sort of had the article, pardon me, and then every now and again you'd get sort of like links to the other McCann stories, and so you'd be reading it, and it'd be
so you'd be led to something, yeah.
And it'd be saying, this police officer Juan Calo is basically saying that McCann staged the event and to cover up Maddie's, you know, death, and then you'd see the next line in red. Police say they are close to finding Maddie. So the psychological warfare there is on, isn't it? It's just very, very subliminal, the way that they do this in online media now. That also relates to a paper that Andrew like sent out this week that got it on here that they NATO have done a paper about let me find it.
Oh yeah, was looking at that. I was reading the PDF of that NATO psyops.
Yeah, yeah. The Allied Joint Doctrine for Psychological Operations. So they're not even hiding the fact that
No, not at all.
And also, so I mean, you know, that article you can find, or that PDF you can find on the Type 1 Facebook group there. I've posted it. I'll put it in the show notes that so you can sort of go delve into how NATO are openly discussing the psychological
how to
war.
Carry out psychological operations. I mean, yeah.
There's also a an article. It was a Vice article on Tom Shecker from Spy Culture has done quite a lot of this research before this Vice article has come out on how the CIA are heavily involved in co-producing and sort of directing different TV shows such as like Homeland, Argo, the film Argo with Ben Affleck, which was about how the CIA, like were faking a film, a documentary film about Iran. So that's like life imitating art, imitating life, imitating art in that one.
They've done another sort of one of those with Ricky Gervais at the moment, haven't they? Where it's two guys pretending they're in a war zone and doing broadcasts from it, but they're just sort of like walking around doing the noises of bombs dropping themselves and all that. Have you seen this?
Like a wag the dog tactic?
It's a movie. Yeah, it's a movie, yeah. It's just been in the cinemas. It's already on Netflix, though, so obviously it didn't do too good in the theatres.
What's it called?
I can't remember. I'll look it up. I can't remember. A must for any fans of Trailer Park Boys, the new season's on, if you've got Netflix, just skip to episode 6. It's got Snoop Dogg and Doug Benson and Tom Arnold in it. They're in it for 3 episodes, and it's fucking... will not disappoint any of the stoner fraternity among us. It's fucking brilliant. But I suppose you should watch the whole thing, but I just went straight to that and went back the whole thing. Tom Arnold's really funny. He's like a real fan of the show, sort of thing, and he just wants to do everything that Bubbles and Ricky do. And, like, wear the same clothes and all that. And Snoop's just... it's great. It's so good. Doug Benson doesn't say anything in it until, like, the 3rd episode.
Is he just too stoned?
He's too stoned, yeah. They basically open a casino what's a spoiler? They open a casino in the trailer park, and Julian gets Ricky and Bubbles to make an internet advert for people to come. And you buy a bracelet for $50 and you get to drink as much as you like and gamble in the casino. But when Ricky and Bubbles done the thing, they said you can have as much dope as you like as well, sort of thing. Yeah. And it ends up getting on Jim Kimmel. So fucking Snoop turns up in a limo going, "Yeah, I saw you in Jimmy Kimmel, man." And just fucking Brit. So good. So good. So, heads up there for y'all who've got Netflix.
Are y'all seeing much of the effect of the current weaponization of the millennials in this social justice warrior craze? I mean, it's good.
Is that the little things with one eye? Is that the little things with one eye?
No, they're minions.
Is that right.
No, he's talking about... Swami's talking about the millennials, which are people that have been born...
Young
people. Yeah, like, within... From, like...
Oh, a century.
Yeah, your daughters. They're millennials.
Yeah, no, just one.
Well, I suppose.
It's unfortunate.
I think it's people born from like 1990.
But the effect, though, is this: you're seeing these folks who are like recent college grads, got their degrees, all this, who have been educated into ignorance and think they know a whole lot, but don't really know much of anything about how things really work. And are really, really, really digging into this Bernie Sanders feel the burn thing and completely thinking that when they hear these words, redistribution of wealth, it means the wealth is going to come downwards. You know? And they're buying this. They're really, and they're pissed because they know they've got no future. The jobs aren't there. They're not going to be able to pay their student loans. Maybe if they take, you know, 2 part-time jobs, they might be able to keep up with their loan payments while living with mom and dad. But these people are just being turned into the most angry, ignorant group heard of weaponized ignorance you can imagine.
Well, it is this, this new voter generation, the people that are going to be voting in this, in your general election, and in the local elections and the European referendum, they are like the new like social media generation, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their whole lives is hashtag this, hashtag that. You know what?
what is scary is that, maybe not this lot of people, but the next lot of people will have been born after 9/11.
Yeah.
I mean, this sort of generation have been brought up around the time and have lived through it, but when they were very, very little.
My youngest is born after 9/11.
Yeah.
She was thank.
Well, see, it's the same techniques that were used in the 60s that established, like, Bill Ayers and Weather Underground and Black Panthers and all this. Just get people pissed enough to go out and commit crimes.
Which will
be lovely for loading up those prison-for-profit corporations now and getting them into the system, like just happened with this Soros-sponsored Democracy Spring thing in Washington that got no mainstream attention, yet hundreds of people were arrested and processed, and they were all just happy. I'm standing up for what's right. Well, guess what? Now you're in the system. You don't want to be in that system under any conditions.
Yeah.
But now you are. That's dummy.
Well, and I suppose this wave of generation, we're talking sort of 5 years after Occupy, so they sort of need another wave, and the Bernie, either Bernie or Hillary or Trump, they're all different waves, aren't they?
Yep. Just factionalize, splinter, whatever technique is necessary in order to get folks to fight amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Or basically ridiculous things that have no importance, but it's what they get worked up about. And that will then pay off with not having a unified front to deal with the actual goings on.
Yeah, and it's all projection. It's all projection to a point, whether it be, Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or Ted Cruz. I don't know how Ted Cruz is even running, even though he's like Canadian.
He turned in his Canadian citizenship and took up U.S. citizenship.
I thought you had to be born. Yeah.
Well, to be president, you do by the Constitution, but you can run.
All right.
It's not going to win.
What's the point in running if you're not going to be president?
Because he's a Bush person. He's from that. I mean, literally.
Just making up the numbers now. Jeb's Bush. Gone.
And his right, and his wife worked for the Council on Foreign Relations, These people are as deep into the ugly dark side of manipulating our formerly representative republic as one can get. They are neocons. He carries out the Bible and, you know, all this stuff about God's anointing me to be the president. You know, what? Shut up.
So, as I was saying, though, all these are projecting the power onto other people rather than those people that are projecting their power realizing, why not just use this power and empower myself into do what I do rather than following these different factions, because regardless of how do they trust that, how do we trust politicians? That is a really fundamental question, isn't it? Whenever they bring up, we've, at the moment over here, we've got the in-out referendum bollocks. And we've got different factions from the same party, that are saying, and we've got different parties on the same side in this situation. So that must give us a clue into the misnomer of political sides. Because in this case, opposers are opposing together other sections that are aligned together as well, that are usually apart. And right. So, and obviously, they are creating war for profit all over the world. So it just baffles me how people take it. Why the fuck are we taking these people are saying one thing? It is complete Stockholm syndrome, isn't it?
It's the indoctrination through the public education. You know, we're taught that things work this way. This is how it is, and you've got a part to play in this. And MTV says go vote, and you know, and then it's like, but it's an entirely rigged system. Don't go to the carnival thinking you're going to win a bunch of stuff. You're going to lose a bunch of money. Is what's going to happen? You know.
And the more stories that are coming out of all the tax stuff and all the boisterous extracurricular university activities. These people are completely corruptible and have been completely corrupted. It just baffles me how people put their faith in not only the people that are elected, but in the actual institutions that these representatives are continuing. I am glad that I will I'm not eligible to vote in this election. I'm not eligible.
Oh, this Swami will never vote again. Perhaps on something if it's, you know, of some importance on a local level, but certainly nothing national.
It just, it just encourages...
Voting cards to vote for the new...
It just encourages...
Yeah, we got a new vote. What does it just encourage?
You got the voting cards for the crime the commissioner.
Cop. Yeah, for the cops. I was like, what? Fucking nobody. I'll do it. Yeah, I was quite shocked, yeah. We haven't filled in the registration thing for ages. We just chuck it. We just chuck it in the bin when it comes. You know, the thing you might say.
Yeah.
Your name's printed on it anyway. You've got to sign it and send it back. And we're like, oh fuck off. Don't want it anyway. But the voting cards turn up every time. So.
The last one the last one that came here the other week, it just said, "Is this house empty?"
Oh really.
They're over here now conducting phone surveys on behalf of the Federal Reserve, asking people to volunteer to the phone survey taker all of their private information, their Social Security number, their bank account numbers, their income level, their activity. I mean, it's a deep collection of information, and because they're offering people like $75 or something, you know, some worm on a hook to get all this information, you should keep close to you and no one else. People are just handing it over, and it's
you see there's a phone, there's a show over here that pranks people like that. It's called Phone Jacker. and pretty much all the people just say to them, fuck off. why would anybody give any information over the phone that you know is going to compromise?
Well, it all depends on the setup. You know, those who are gullible will bite. And there's still enough of those around that it must be worth their while to engage in the effort.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the mainstream media-driven folks who, if they're even paying any attention to those lies, you know? It's an entirely different thought pattern. It's an entirely different way of processing the reality that you are witness to. And it's not their fault. I mean, they, you know, nobody wants to admit, oh, I was dumb, I got duped. You know what I mean?
No, because we've all been in that situation, mm-hmm. haven't we?
Right.
Yeah, and it can be as minimal or as extreme as it is, yeah.
And no one prior to our participation in these duping things asked our permission or gave us warning. We did it because it seemed like the right thing to do at the time, or it satisfied some urge, or it, you know, enabled some desire, some attachment at some point, you know, and... It's those exact things that will, by those who know what they're doing, using psyops, using mass media manipulations.
Yeah, yeah.
Those who can't see it aren't even going to get a whiff of what's actually cooking, you know?
And the more accustomed you are to that bombardment of information, you know, whether or not it's like you're reading it in a newspaper or getting it from a TV screen or a computer screen, The way the bombardment, you know, is processed.
Yeah, and now people are so subject to, you know, clickbait.
Yeah.
Just because a link looks like it's going to be something interesting or whatever, doesn't. You know, that's how you often end up in a place you don't want to be. You know, and or further into other things. You know, it's just, wow.
When it's not a when a site is presented to me that's a new thing, I'm always aware of what's on that front page, and my rule of thumb is that if at the bottom of it it's got those that standard like 8 stories, it appears to my mind that the website has some dubious comment.
Right.
That it might not be telling me the truth.
Well, once one develops some discernment, it's relatively easy to spot these clickbait things and just go, oh, no. You know, but
I was really surprised today. I went on David Icke's site, and down the sidebar, Richard Hammond appeared. Richard Hammond, to our American friends, is... was one of the presenters of Top Gear, which I'm sure you have Top Gear in the States, or not anymore.
BBC America used to run it.
Yeah.
Or still does.
He was
on David Icke's fucking chat room.
No, just like on the side page. It had like adverts, and so it was like David Icke's tour, David Icke's tour, because he always likes to promote his tours, bless him.
Oh, sure.
Some new story, and then Richard Hammond's something adventure, I didn't click, and then David Icke. Beneath him, as like a little, I just thought, I wonder if he knows that he's on David Icke's side.
Probably not. Obviously, one of his puppets or something that's probably putting out to all the cheapest places that gets any kind of traffic. Because I can imagine David Icke's site gets a fair amount of traffic, doesn't it?
Right.
So it's probably not too bad for an advertiser. It's probably cheap to advertise on it as well.
Yep. I mean, I suppose that the site, David Icke's site, and you know, other media outlets within the alternative type place do need some revenue to run the site, but surely. To have credibility, they need to be promoting things within credible things within the community, rather than you know, daily mash things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
And that's why you'll never see that on Type1Radio.
No.
.com.
Not even the fucking Berkey light.
and
just still not available in Iowa,
apparently. Right. But I'm just going to... go yeah. and look for download the When Doves Cry. Okay, so
okay. Oh, we did here at the ashram on the river in the 100-acre woods in FEMA Region 5. We did just recently invest in the Zen Water Systems 4-gallon countertop multi-stage water filter because we live on a river, so water will be available, and now it's just, you know, get it clean.
Yeah, Dan's got one of those super fly fucking pump ones. Have you seen them? That you can purify like a liter in, is it 10 minutes or something like that?
Well, according to Natural News, the Zen Water Systems system was second to the Berkey. And the Berkey's way more expensive. So we picked this one up that will do the job and not cost $300.
What I do is I drive to a swing every week and fill up a week's worth of water for us to drink and enjoy. So I'll have to do it tomorrow because it's that time. Another early morning.
Yeah.
You gotta carry water. And when you're enlightened...
Oh, for anyone listening to this show who might happen to be a meditative living listener, Sonic and this Swami made the decision yesterday. We're moving the production of that show to Tuesdays. If that makes any difference to you whatsoever, you are now informed, but it will still be available once the podcast is put up on Type 1 Radio. Come at your leisure, but the live show will now be Tuesdays rather than Fridays. So,
and that's not going to mess with the schedule. That's not going to mess with the schedule, is it? I'm not going to have to bump somebody.
No. There's just us lot. Which it
go down to the courthouse to get justice, and that's what you find is just us.
It's called the Cozy Corner.
Cozy. There's a cafe, or there's like a cafe in my hometown called the Cozy Corner. Cozy Corner Cafe, and it's like it's on the corner of a road.
And is the road Cozy Road?
No. I don't even know what it's called. Is this on Main Drag? Argyle Street, I guess. Alexandra Parade. I can't remember.
The last time.
So long.
The last time we went to Glasgow, we went to the Macintosh Caf. That's quite nice.
Yeah. There's loads of Macintosh shit in Glasgow.
Yeah. Some of it got burnt down, though, didn't it?
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah. Last time I saw Blue Green, it was, it was about a week after that had happened, and he said it was, like, really strange. Everybody was sort of, in the streets going, wow. Part of the, because big part of pretentious Glasgow goes on about Rennie Macintosh a lot, and, most people will say, well, he's just a guy whose stuff is named after something. There was lots of coming together in the streets of art people and alcoholics. it was quite a funny atmosphere sort of thing where everyone was, some people were trying to explain exactly how important he was and they weren't giving a fuck. It was like, very Glasgow.
That was the alcoholics explaining the significance to the artists.
Everyone's an alcoholic in Scotland. Fuck yeah.
Everyone's got a quite high blood alcohol level.
Next time I go, if I want to have a drink, I'm gonna have to take more because it's fucking dead expensive. Apparently, it's getting like Scandinavia where they're putting the prices of booze up. Because you hear these adverts on the radio for like meal for two from Marks and Spencer's with wine.
Yeah.
And right at the end it says This offer does not apply in Scotland. It's like, fuck, you know. This old Nicola doesn't want... Sugary things are going to be dead deer as well.
Yeah.
That's just going to cause, like...
Fudge donuts. Those fudge donuts are going to go up loads in St. Andrews.
Cream buns.
Yeah.
Cream cookies and all that. Be like, no. You can only have these if you're rich.
Right, so, well, we're coming to the end of the show because the When Doves Cry is about 4 minutes. So we will reconvene next Saturday at the usual time. It's been a sad but enjoyable show, reminiscing on Prince.
Yeah.
And Thomas will be here next week.
Yeah. Excellent.
So if you're not depressed enough now, stick around.
And listen to When Doves Cry. See you next week, folks.
Bye. Namaste. Covers me.